The Children Under the Ice by R.A. Douthat. Chapter 27, The Letter. Mikey carefully made his way through the thick tree branches with the headlights of the many patrol cars ahead guiding his way. Chad, Donnie, and Stan followed closely behind, navigating over logs and rocks. "Shh," Mikey said, "you're making too much noise." Then they stopped right at the edge of the forest, spying the investigation of the latest murder. They spotted Detective Williams and Mikey's dad talking, while Deputy Rogers placed the usual yellow caution tape once again around the edge of the pond. "Well, Sheriff, this probably wasn't committed by an old bum," Detective Williams said. "Nope," Mikey's dad said. They both stood over a dead body covered with a white sheet. The detective bent down and lifted up part of the sheet. "Looks like a bashed skull," he said. Donnie cringed. "Ooh, gross," he whispered. "Shh," Chad said. "Yes, and a slit throat," the sheriff said. "I think I'm gonna puke," Donnie covered his mouth. "Shh," Mikey said. "I took plenty of photos of the scene, and the medical examiner is ready to take the body," Mikey's dad said. "A tragic ending for such a nice lady." "I sent a patrol car over to her house," the detective said. "He radioed back that they found a lot of blood in the back of the quilt shop, forced entry in the back, and her car was stolen. No fingerprints." "The killer probably wore gloves," Mikey's dad scratched his head underneath his cowboy hat. "Was it a robbery?" Deputy Rogers asked as he approached them. "Nope, all the money was still in the register, and her business checkbook was still there under the front counter." The detective wrote down a few notes. "I still don't get it," Mikey's dad shook his head. "Why would someone want to hurt her like this?" Mikey couldn't believe what he heard. "She must have been dead when we went to see her," he said. "That's why she didn't answer the door, and that's why her car was gone." They watched as the coroner and his assistant lifted the body bag onto the gurney and wheeled her off to the waiting van. "She was such a nice lady," Deputy Rogers said to Mikey's dad. "Yes, yes, she was," Mikey heard his dad say as he headed toward the patrol car. Mikey felt his eyes sting with tears. "I can't believe this is happening," he said. He turned to leave. The others followed after him. "Dang, she knew who the killer was, too." "Oh, here we go again," Donnie said. He stormed past Mikey and out of the forest. "What's that supposed to mean?" Mikey asked. Donnie turned around, revealing anger in his eyes. "You're crazy," he pointed to Mikey. "You probably still believe in that stupid ghost story, huh?" "It isn't stupid," Donnie waved off Mikey and stormed off. "Like I said, you're crazy," he muttered. "You saw the ghost too, same as I did," Mikey shouted after him. "Will you two knock it off?" Chad said. "No, I won't knock it off. He saw the ghost that night," Mikey said. Donnie came stomping back. "I don't know what I saw. All I know is that you led us on some wild goose chase. Destry was almost killed, and now this old lady ends up dead." He shoved his finger into Mikey's chest. "You know what I think? I think you're bad luck." Mikey pushed his finger away. "Who cares what you think?" But Donnie persisted. "Yeah, I think you're bad luck, and anyone who hangs around with you ends up hurt or dead." "Guys, knock it off," Chad stepped between them, but Donnie's large body overwhelmed him. He shoved Chad aside, then he turned to Mikey and shoved him hard. "You're a freak," Donnie screamed. "It's no wonder your mom left you." And that's all Mikey needed to hear. The next thing he knew, he was moving his arms so fast he couldn't see them anymore. He tasted blood in his mouth and felt pain in his chest. But other than that, he didn't know what was happening until he felt the ground under his back and Chad lying on top of him trying to hold him down. "Mikey, stop!" Chad shouted. Mikey looked at his friend's face, pale with fright and worry. "Leave me alone," Mikey said. He pushed Chad off his chest, rolled over, and got to his feet. He saw Donnie sitting on the ground with Stanny looking over him. Blood dripped from Donnie's mouth, and he was crying. Mikey spit blood onto the muddy snow and wiped his mouth. Chad stood next to him. "You hit him good, Mike," Chad said. "He won't bother you anymore, that's for sure." "Doesn't matter," Mikey said. "Nothing matters anymore." He turned and took off running toward his house as fast as he could. That next Monday, Mikey sat at the kitchen table working on his homework. School had been almost unbearable that day. Not only was everyone talking about him, but most were angry with him, thanks to Donnie's lies. Heck, even the lunch ladies looked at him funny, so he decided to eat lunch alone in the hall. To make things worse, his homeroom teacher hung up a large poster board for everyone to sign and take to Destry, who was home from the hospital. Every time Mikey looked at that poster, he felt ill. Christmas was coming, and so was the end of 1976. Mikey was beginning to think it would end up as the worst year of his life. With Christmas time came decorations. After school, each classroom began to decorate for the Christmas decorating contest they had every year. Lexi and the other girls made paper chains out of red and green construction paper and hung them from the ceiling. Chad, Donnie, and the other boys cut out snowflakes from white paper and taped them to the windows while music played in the background. His teacher asked him to stay and help, but Mikey's heart just wasn't into it, so he walked home alone. Now he sat at home alone, trying to finish a writing assignment, but nothing was coming to his mind except images of Mrs. Stevenson, Destry lying on the ground in pain, and the keepsake box. For the first time in a long time, he wasn't excited for Christmas. Most of the houses were decorated, and the shops downtown already had lights up with big Christmas trees in their windows. But all he could think about was how Mrs. Stevenson was killed, and how he lost all his friends. Mikey turned his head and looked at the blank wall at the other end of the family room. That's where his mom usually put the Christmas tree. He and his dad would go pick one out at the lot at the edge of town and bring it home while his mom played Christmas music on the hi-fi system. He loved decorating the tree with the scent of baking cookies coming from the kitchen. Those were happier times. Mikey closed his eyes and regretted how he never truly appreciated those times like he does now. But it's too late. Everything was lost. He sighed and scribbled something onto the blank piece of wide ruled paper in front of him. He heard the garage door open and his dad's truck pull in. Moments later, his dad walked in. "Hey, son," he said. "How was school? Or should I not ask?" "Don't ask." Mikey leaned his head on his hand. He could hear his dad shuffling through the mail. "Oh, I completely forgot." His dad walked over and tossed an unopened letter onto the table. "You got some mail last week, but with the holiday and, well, everything, I forgot to give it to you." Mikey looked at the letter. It was addressed to him, but there was no address showing who had sent it. Intrigued, Mikey picked it up and tore it open. "Dear Michael," it read in a woman's cursive handwriting, "I'm writing this to you in case something happens to me." He scanned down to the end of the letter where it was signed, "Mrs. Stevenson." "Holy cow!" he shouted. "What is it?" his dad asked from the kitchen. Nothing, he said, and grabbed his notebook and letter. He headed upstairs. "It's just a letter stating that I won a writing contest." "Hey, that's terrific," his dad said. "Yeah, well, I'm going upstairs." Mikey rushed up the stairs, entered his bedroom, and then sat down on his bed with his letter. It was postmarked the day she was killed. "She must have mailed it that morning," he thought. "I hope I am wrong, but I don't think I am," she wrote. "You see, I have discovered that the killer of those precious children is the Reverend Johnson." Mikey gasped and read that line over again. "Holy cow," he murmured. Then he continued reading. "It took some researching, but I did it. The Reverend is Mr. Davis, the very same bus driver from Sherman Oaks. Michael, he is a very dangerous man. He has disguised himself as a layman reverend, but he is not. Please tell your father the news and ask him to do some digging on the Reverend. And Michael, please keep away from the Reverend. Let your father handle things." "Mikey," his dad shouted from downstairs. Mikey jumped. Yeah? "I have to head to a town meeting at the church," he said. Mikey furrowed his brow. "Why?" He opened the door and asked, "The townspeople want to talk about the recent murder. Seems there are some fears and concerns," he said and peeked up the stairs. "You stay here, okay? Remember, you're grounded, so stay here." Sure, Dad," Mikey said. He hated being grounded for fighting with Donnie, but that's how it had to be. "Should I tell him about the letter now?" he thought. "But I haven't read it all yet. I'd better wait until he gets back." "Okay, I'll be back in an hour." His dad picked up his keys. "Hey, Dad?" Mikey shouted down the stairs. "Yeah?" "Will Reverend Johnson be there?" Mikey asked. "I believe so. Why?" Just wondering. Thanks." Mikey closed the door. He could hear his dad's truck pull out and head down the street. Mikey picked up the letter and continued reading. Michael, I wrote this letter and sent it off today because I know he will come for me, and if you are reading this letter, my deepest fears have come true. But I wanted you to know the story. Years ago, when I worked at the school, Mr. Davis found out his wife was having an affair with Dr. Ed Stuckey. That's why he killed her. I believe your Uncle Kevin discovered this, and that's why he and his little friends were drowned on that school bus. So many people suspected that the bus driver escaped to Canada. Years later, on a trip to see my cousins in Toronto, I went to the records office on a hunch that maybe, just maybe, Mr. Davis had escaped to Canada after the murders. Well, after much research, I discovered that a man who looked exactly like Mr. Davis did live in a small town near Toronto. The town is our sister town, Kew Gardens. I went there and found out that the man was working there as a school janitor. But before I could question him, I discovered that he had left the school and came back to Minnesota. I drove down to some smaller towns around Sherman Oaks and asked around and showed them a photo of Mr. Davis. Soon I discovered that a man resembling him worked for another small town school as the janitor. So I went to the school and hid across the street so I could spot him. That's when I saw him. I saw Mr. Davis. I knew it was him. I told the police, but they did not believe me without more proof. Michael, that was about 10 years ago. I had to return to Sherman Oaks. I couldn't follow this man forever. But I would go and visit that small town every chance I could, and each time, there he was, working at the school. Inevitably, it happened, just as I feared it would. One day, Mr. Davis wasn't there when I visited the town. I asked the school, and they said the janitor left suddenly. I returned to Sherman Oaks defeated. I felt I had let your Uncle Kevin and Principal Stuckey down. I didn't know what else to do. It was around that time that our Reverend Ellis decided to retire. He introduced us to his replacement, Reverend Johnson, a layman preacher from a small town down south. I thought he looked familiar, but I dismissed my feelings right away. The Reverend had white hair and a beard, and he talked differently. He even carried himself differently, so I put my suspicions aside. Yet something about the Reverend always bothered me. He didn't know much about the Bible, and he didn't seem to have much time for his parishioners. When I talked to him about this, he would become irate. Still, I guess he was a decent man. No one else seemed bothered. One day, I saw Ed Stuckey talking to the Reverend near the church. I could tell they were arguing. I hid around the back of the church and listened in. That's when I heard Ed Stuckey say that he knew the Reverend was really Mr. Davis. Frankly, I feel Mr. Davis returned to get even with Dr. Stuckey. They argued and the Reverend threatened Ed with some harsh words, so I decided to investigate even further. That was as recent as 3 years ago. Unfortunately, Ed Stuckey began to drink more and more. I knew the likelihood of anyone believing his story about the Reverend was slim at best. When Reverend Johnson saw Ed had become a drunk and a disgrace, I suppose he decided not to kill him as long as he kept quiet. I knew it was up to me to investigate and prove that Ed Stuckey was right. I was a fool. I should have just gone to the police. Now look at all that's happened. It's too late for me. Michael, I have proof that Reverend Johnson is Mr. Davis, the murderer that haunted Sherman Oaks for years, and he is the same man who drove that school bus into the pond. I wanted to show you my proof. If you are reading this letter, well, it never happened. It's up to you now. I know you will do the right thing. Take this letter to your father and ask him to investigate further. Ask him to go to Kew Gardens and talk to the police about any suspicious disappearances there. You can do it, Michael. I have also sent letters to the police at Kew Gardens and to the police in the city explaining to them the evidence I uncovered. I have included photographs of Mr. Davis and the Reverend for you and your father to compare. Please be careful, Michael. Mr. Davis has killed many times before. He will not hesitate to hurt you once he finds out you have this letter. And if something has happened to me, please know that you had nothing to do with it. You are a good boy. I'm proud of you. Sincerely, Michael read aloud, Mrs. Stevenson. He covered his eyes with his hands and felt them fill with tears as he remembered her soft, grandmotherly hug. I'm so sorry, Mrs. Stevenson, he sobbed. I'm so sorry that he killed you. I should have gotten there sooner. I should have been there to help you. Mikey stood, then grabbed a book off his desk and threw it across the room. I hate this! He looked at the letter lying on the bed. I hate letting people down all the time. I've got to do something about this. He picked up the letter, then ran downstairs, put on his coat, and headed to the church. Mikey slowly approached the church doors, which were pried open. People passed by him as they entered the foyer. They were discussing the recent murders as they'd walked by and removed their coats. Mikey gulped. They seemed a lot angrier than he expected. You can do this, he thought. You can tell these people the truth. Who cares if they scream at you and call you crazy? He sighed. As he stepped inside the church, he saw his father in the foyer talking to the Reverend. That's a nice jacket, his dad said to the Reverend. He fingered a winter coat that hung on a nearby chair. What? Oh, that's an old coat of mine, the Reverend said. I see here it has a tear in it. Seems a piece of fabric has been torn off, Mikey's dad said as he held up the coat. Like I said, the Reverend seemed nervous. It's an old coat. He quickly picked up the coat and took it with him into the sanctuary. Mikey could see the Reverend was anxious to get away from his dad, the sheriff. Mikey saw his father join several townspeople in the pews. They were murmuring and gesturing with their hands as though in a heated discussion. Mikey swallowed hard. He could see Destry's father there, along with Donnie's father. He saw Chad sitting with his parents, and Lexi sitting by her parents. Oh, great, he thought. Everyone's here. He hesitated briefly, and then fingered the letter inside his pocket. No, you cannot back down. You've got to do this. You've got to do this for Mrs. Stevenson, and for Kevin, and for Destry. He walked into the sanctuary, and immediately his eyes found Miss Jennings, sitting in the back. She grinned at him, but then her brow crinkled as though concerned. Mikey guessed that his face showed fear. He was glad she was there, but he shivered because he was scared to death. He turned his head and looked up the center aisle. That's where he saw the Reverend sitting in the front. Mikey squinted his eyes and stared him down. Now look, Sheriff, we want answers. Donnie's dad stood and shouted. Yeah, what's going on around here? A woman asked. Mikey's dad stood to speak. We're still investigating. I cannot discuss an open case, he said. Aw, come on, one man said. Quit beating around the bush and tell us what we need to know. Yes, tell us what's going on, a woman shouted. I know what's going on, Mikey interrupted. All the people turned their heads to look at him. He felt a rush of blood reach his head and dizziness come over him. What are you talking about? Donnie's father asked. He looked very angry. Sheriff, get a hold of your crazy kid. Mikey's dad studied his son's face. What is it, son? Mikey held up the letter. This, he shouted. The people looked at the letter in his hand. This is a letter from the late Mrs. Stevenson. A woman gasped. Mikey's father furrowed his brow as though bewildered. Yes, it's true, Mikey shouted. The Reverend shot him a venomous look, but Mikey stood firm and stared back. That's right, a letter from the victim stating who her killer was, Mikey continued. A woman stood to leave. No one's going anywhere, Mikey said. The woman looked at him, then slowly sat back down. Listen to me, Mikey continued. I read this letter today. In it, she reveals the killer of Dr. Ed Stuckey and the killer of those two young women murdered long ago. He looked at Miss Capeton, who nodded and blinked away tears. And this letter reveals the killer of my Uncle Kevin Thompson and all the children who drowned on that school bus. More women gasped, and all the people began to turn to one another and murmur. What nonsense is this? Donnie's father said. But Reverend Johnson remained seated and surprisingly calm. Let me see that letter, Donnie's father asked. Who is it, son? Mikey's dad asked. What? Donnie's father said. You believe this nonsense, Sheriff? The sheriff shot him a look that made him sit down. I believe my son. When Mikey heard that, he couldn't help but smile. He felt a surge of courage run through his body. The letter states that the killer is... Mikey hesitated. The Reverend Johnson! Everyone turned their heads toward the Reverend, who covered his forehead with his hand and shook his head as though deeply disappointed. What? Donnie's father said. He chuckled and pointed to the Reverend. He wasn't even living here at the time. Some of the townspeople murmured, while others laughed a little. Mikey looked at Lexi. She had a look of determination on her face. He knew she believed him. She nodded as though remembering things the Reverend had said, but Chad had a look of disbelief on his face. The Reverend Johnson is really Mr. Davis, the old bus driver. Mikey jabbed his finger at the Reverend. Mikey's dad turned to look at the man sitting there shaking his head disapprovingly. What? A man in the back shouted. What proof did she state in that letter? She said she heard Reverend Johnson arguing with Ed Stuckey because Ed Stuckey recognized him, Mikey said. The old town drunk? said one woman. He didn't even know what he was talking about half the time. More people chuckled. Mikey started to feel frightened. That old drunk didn't even know what day it was most of the time, Donnie's father said. And now she wants us to trust his word. Everyone was laughing now. Yes, Mikey said. Where's old man Stucky now? They laughed over him. He's dead, remember? Mikey continued, but it was no use. How convenient is that for the killer? The people ignored him. Everyone ignored him, except his father, who was nodding in agreement. She said Mr. Davis escaped to Canada. He went to Kew Gardens, he shouted above the talking. It's all here in the letter. Mikey started to hand the sheriff the letter, but he was interrupted. This is ridiculous, one woman said. Can we please get on with this meeting? I want to know what's being done about these gruesome murders. Some people agreed with her, and some motioned for Mikey to stop talking. But it's true, Mikey shouted. It's the Reverend. Sit down, Donnie shouted to Mikey. See, I told you he was nuts, he nudged his dad, who agreed. Listen to me, Mikey tried shouting above the talking, but they ignored him. He's the killer. It all makes sense, I'm telling you. She overheard him. She gave me photographs of Mr. Davis and the Reverend. It's him. Mikey saw the Reverend step off the chancel and walk toward him. He knew what that meant. No, Mikey shouted and turned to run. Mike, his dad, walked toward him. Wait. No, Mikey turned around. You can't stop me. It's all right here in the letter. His eyes caught Miss Jennings. I believe you, Mikey, she said. Come on, Mike, the Reverend said. Don't run off. No. Mikey felt a man's grip on his arm. He shook it loose and ran through the foyer. The letter dropped to the ground. Sheriff, we want answers. Mikey could hear the people shouting at his dad. Mikey, wait, he heard his father shout after him as he ran out the church and down the front steps into the cold night. On the ground lay Mrs. Stevenson's letter. Chapter 28. The Vision. While the townspeople in the church continued to argue, Mikey took off through the forest to the far side of the woods as fast as he could until the glow of the streetlights in town and Christmas lights in the neighborhood could no longer be seen. He ran into tree limbs and deeper into their black tangled mess of branches and twigs. You're a freak! No wonder your mom left you, he heard Donnie's words echo in his head. All you have is your old man. Donnie's right, Mikey thought. It's all my fault. What is this nonsense? He could hear the loud voice of Donnie's father inside his head. It is nonsense, Mikey thought. What was I thinking? Believing in ghosts? Asking a ghost to help me solve a murder? I'm such an idiot to think anyone in this town would believe me. He ran until the forest became so thick he couldn't move anymore. That's when he turned and realized his jacket had become entangled in the branches. As he tried to tear it free, he heard some footsteps nearby. Probably a fox or a raccoon, he thought. He continued to pull at his jacket while hot tears streamed down his face and his nose became stuffed up. He cried and pulled and wiped his nose all at once. And yet the sound of footsteps became louder. He stopped moving. The sound of footsteps stopped. Who's there? He asked. He wiped his cheeks and sniffled. Maybe it's one of my dad's deputies searching the area, he thought. Maybe it's a ghost? Finally, he freed his jacket and took a few steps back. He looked in all directions, but the blackness revealed nothing but more branches. He turned and began walking out of the forest, pushing twigs and branches out of his way. A few scraped and cut his face, but he didn't care. Suddenly, he felt that strange feeling of being watched, watched by someone unfriendly. The sound of footsteps started again. He could sense someone was behind him. He moved faster, stepping over dead logs and large rocks, trying not to fall. The feeling inside was so powerful, Mikey just had to look. He had to see what was behind him, so he turned, and then he froze. Standing only a few feet away from him was the silhouette of a tall man he had seen in the forest that one night with his friends. The man held a branch away, then slowly let it go. Eerily, at that exact moment, Mikey heard a voice coming from right next to him. It wasn't a loud voice or even a man's voice. It sounded like a child's voice. Run, it said, but Mikey couldn't move his body. The shadowy figure took a step toward him. Run, said the child's voice again. Mikey had a million thoughts go through his mind, all of them ending with his dead body being pulled from the frozen pond, surrounded by yellow caution tape. "Run!" the voice shouted, waking Mikey from his trance. He obeyed and took off as fast as he could away from the shadowy figure, but he could hear the footsteps following close behind. The branches before him made it hard to escape, and he knew the man was catching up to him. The end of the forest was nowhere in sight. "Why did I run here?" he thought. "No one saw me, so no one knows where I am." His instincts told him to keep moving as fast as he could, but it was too late. He felt the strong arm of the man grab his shoulder and push him to the ground. Mikey crawled away until a large metal object came crashing down inches away from his head. He turned to see it was a sledgehammer. "No!" he shouted. The man jerked Mikey's body over and raised the sledgehammer high above him. It was so dark, Mikey couldn't see the man's face. Yet he did see another figure shove the man so hard he fell over to the side and got stuck in some branches. The sledgehammer went flying. The figure was of a child. "Kevin?" Mikey thought. "Now get up and run!" the voice demanded again. Mikey leapt to his feet and ran out of the forest. He noticed he was near the old rickety bridge. He stopped. He had to stop and breathe for a moment because his chest and sides ached. His warm breath appeared before him in misty puffs as he bent over trying to breathe. He trotted away under the bridge out of sight of the man. In the darkness, there under the bridge, he felt safe, yet he didn't feel alone. "Thank you," he said to no one there. Deep down, though, he knew who it was that had helped him. "Thank you for helping me." He reached up and wiped his forehead, then peeked out of the darkness of the shadows that hid him from sight. That's when he saw the man trot out of the forest. Mikey leaned back into the shadows so he couldn't be seen. He watched the man carefully slide across the frozen pond to a parked car. He made his way around it and got into the passenger side of the car. Mikey cocked his head to the side as though confused. Then the headlights came on. So Mikey leaned back as far as he could to stay out of the glow of the lights. The engine revved and the car turned around and then sped off. He couldn't see the type of car, but he had a feeling he knew who was in it. The Reverend Johnson. But who was driving? When it felt safe to come out of the shadows, Mikey stepped out from under the bridge, but a hand stopped him. He looked at his arm and saw a boy's hand touching him. He followed the arm with his eyes and saw it led to a boy's face. It was Kevin Thompson. Mikey felt sick to his stomach, as though he was on a fast roller coaster at the amusement park. He pulled his arm away, but the ghost came toward him. Mikey knew his own face must have gone pale with fright because the ghost motioned for him to remain calm. "What do you want with me?" Mikey asked. "Haven't I done enough?" "Help me," the ghost said in a soft, childlike voice. "I'm trying," Mikey said. His voice cracked as he thought back over the last few weeks. "Can't you see that I'm trying to help you?" He felt the warm tears roll down his cheeks again. He hastily wiped them away because he was tired of crying about the whole mess. "I've lost all my friends," Mikey sniffled. "Good people have died because of me. The whole town hates me." "Help me," was all the ghost said. "What? I don't know what else to do for you," Mikey cried out, his eyes stung from the tears. "I don't know what else to do." Just then the ghost reached out and touched Mikey's arm, and in that instant, Mikey saw a vision. It moved so fast across his mind that he could barely keep up. Instantly, he was in Uncle Kevin's bedroom in 1961, looking down at the keepsake box. His uncle placed a few items in the hidden compartment inside the box, then closed it and locked it with a silver key. He placed the key in the front pocket of his jeans. Next, Mikey was at the school, walking across the front lawn with his Uncle Kevin. They spotted the bus driver, Mr. Davis, near the school bus, talking to a young woman. Mikey could see that Mr. Davis and the Reverend Johnson were clearly the same person. Immediately, Mikey and Kevin were transported to inside a classroom where many kids were making fun of Kevin, pointing at him and laughing. "No one believes you and your stupid story," one kid pointed and shouted at him. Kevin lowered his eyes. Mikey saw how hurt and embarrassed his Uncle Kevin was. Then he was in the forest walking with Kevin and a few kids. "Where are we going?" one kid asked. They stopped when they saw the bus driver carrying something suspicious. He nervously glanced behind. "Don't look back, you fool," Mr. Davis mumbled to himself. "You know better than that." The arms of the victim he carried dangled lifelessly while he walked. Mr. Davis dropped the body into the small boat on the shore, adjusted his jacket, and then started to push the boat out into the water. He hopped in.
"Is that
Is that a dead body he just put into the boat? Gus asked. He covered his mouth. I think I'm going to be sick. Shh, Kevin said when the other boys crept up. That's him, Shorty said as he nudged Kevin. That's Mr. Davis, all right. See, I told you so, Kevin pointed. He killed his wife. Mr. Davis paddled the boat out to the middle of the pond and paused. Then he took Mrs. Davis's body and dropped her into the murky water. Mikey stood there with his mouth open as he watched the scene in the vision. What the heck are you kids doing here? Mr. Davis shouted at them. With such anger, the veins in his throat bulged and spit flew from his mouth. He sprinted toward them and caught Kevin. Mikey began to run away. The vision was that real. Mr. Davis looked at the boy staring at him with mouths gaping and he grinned. Then he rudely turned Kevin Thompson around to face the other boys. The boys looked at their friend, Kevin, shaking in the killer's arms. His large brown eyes watered. Before he knew it, Mikey was on the school bus that fateful evening. Once inside, the boy sat shivering in nervous silence as the bus began to move. Kevin looked at Mikey with saddened eyes. Mr. Davis turned the bus around and started onto the bridge that went over the railroad tracks near the far side of the pond, where they all played hockey in the wintertime. The bus made its way down the other side of the rickety old bridge, but instead of driving forward toward the neighborhood, the bus made a sharp left turn, so sharp that the kids fell out of their seats. Hey, what are you doing? Kevin shouted. Sorry, kid, Mr. Davis said. Can't take any chances. Kevin yelled for him to stop and tried to rush to the front of the bus, but it was no use. The bus sped out of control. Kevin watched as they headed toward the pond, and before Kevin or the others could do anything, the bus slammed into the water and immediately submerged, almost up to the windows. The kids were thrown to the floor. Kevin got up and tried to pry his window open, but he remembered how the old bus windows never slid open. He caught a glimpse of Mr. Davis scurrying out his driver's side window as the waters rose around them. Kevin quickly ran to the window and tried to follow Mr. Davis, but the force of the water rushing in was too strong for him. He turned to the door and tried to open it with the lever. As he did, the frigid water rushing in pushed him back and shocked his body. He struggled to breathe. Some of the kids waded back to the emergency door exit, but it was jammed. I can't swim, Shorty shouted. The water was almost up to his waist. Help! Kevin heard his friend scream over and over. Kevin looked out the window and watched the bus driver swim to the shore and run away, never looking back. He banged on the windows, trying to get his attention, anyone's attention. Hey! Kevin screamed after him. Come back! Help us! But it was no use. The water inside the bus rose higher and higher. Help us! Kevin shouted and banged on the window, hoping someone in the houses nearby could hear them. He turned to Mikey. Nobody could hear us! Nobody could help us! The last thing Kevin Thompson saw before the bus disappeared forever into the murky water of Sherman Oaks Pond was the bus driver, Mr. Davis, scurrying away. You can't just leave us here. Come back, Kevin cried as he banged on the window. He turned to Mikey. He never looked back. He never even looked back at us. The vision ended. He never even tried to help us, the ghost of Kevin said. He never looked back. He never looked back. Mikey remembered those words. He remembered what Reverend Johnson had told him. I never look back, Mikey, the Reverend had said. What's done is done. I never look back. Mikey blinked his eyes and immediately found himself right back under the bridge. But he was sitting on the ground, trying to catch his breath. The ghost of Kevin stared over him. Help me, he said one more time with intensity in his eyes. He was asking Mikey not to quit. Mikey nodded and stood. I will, he said. I will help you. Then he ran off toward his neighborhood as fast as he could. Chapter 29, The Trophy Case. When Mikey ran through the neighborhood, he ran so fast he didn't even notice Chad, Donnie, and Stanny following him. When he reached the school, he climbed into the window and ran down the stairs to the boiler room. The others caught up to him. Without a word, Mikey pulled a bench over to the lockers, climbed up, and reached on top of the lockers like he was searching for something. What are you doing? Donnie asked. Mikey, you okay? Chad asked. Mikey could see genuine concern on his friend's face. Look, stupid here didn't mean what he said. Chad hit Donnie on the chest. Right, stupid? Chad motioned for Donnie to apologize. Donnie hesitated. Yeah, right, I didn't mean it. He shoved his hands deep into his pockets. Mikey wasn't even listening as he sat down on the bench with the keepsake box on his lap. He had hidden it in the boiler room because he didn't want his father to accidentally find it and return it to Grandma's house. "Mike, your dad is looking for you," Chad said. "The Reverend ran out of the church and they're looking for him to question him." Chad nudged Donnie. Mikey," Donnie said, "it looks like your dad believes you and wants to check out the information in the letter." Mikey ignored them as he dug deep into his pocket for the key to the keepsake box. "Come on, Mike," Chad said. "The cops are coming to help out. It's over. You did it." But Mikey continued with the key and began to insert it into the box. "Hey, that is the special box for keepsakes, huh?" Stanley asked in his thick Russian accent. "Where did you find it? What are you going to do with it?" Just then, Lexi came through the door. "What are you doing here?" Chad asked her. "I saw Mikey running this way and knew something was up," she said as she removed her knit cap. "I told my parents. Did you tell Mikey about the cops coming?" Chad nodded. She immediately saw the wooden keepsake box on Mikey's lap and sat down next to him. "What's going on?" she asked him. "Where did you find that keepsake box?" Mikey ignored her too. He turned the key and then opened the box. Lexi peered in. Then, Mikey pushed down on one corner of the bottom just as his Uncle Kevin did in his vision. The opposite corner popped up, revealing a secret compartment underneath. Mikey carefully lifted the partition. "Wow!" Lexi peered inside the box with her wide eyes. "What is it?" Chad slid over and sat on the other side of Mikey. Donnie came over with Stanley. They all peered into the little box. "Newspaper clippings," Mikey said. He pulled out one and slowly unfolded the yellowed paper. He silently read it for a couple of seconds. It's about my dad. "Huh?" Chad said. Mikey showed it to him. Then he pulled out another newspaper clipping and another. "This one's about my dad too," he said. He shuffled through the others. "They all are." "Wow, Mikey, your dad was a hockey star at this school," Chad said as he read through the clipping. "Looks like he was also a star football player. He was the star quarterback from freshman year all the way to his senior year. They went to state and won the championship," he said. "You never told us that." Mikey winced. "Because I never knew," he said in a soft voice. Lexi read one clipping. "Says here he was awarded a hockey scholarship, but turned it down so he could stay with his mom and dad," he said. He told the reporter that his parents were pretty distraught after his brother's death. "But how?" Mikey wondered. "How could Kevin have saved that article? He was already dead by that time." "I don't know," Lexi said. "Maybe he haunted their house? Maybe he's still there when he isn't in the pond?" Mikey looked at her and thought about it. He remembered how when he was at his grandmother's house, he felt he was guided to his uncle's room and then to the box under the bed. "I think you're right. I did feel a presence there in his bedroom." As they read through the clippings, Mikey saw one last piece of paper in the box. He picked it up, unfolded it, and then read it. "It's a letter from my Uncle Kevin to my dad," he said. "The ghost wrote a letter?" Donnie asked. "What's it say?" "It's dated November 1961. Mikey said, "That's the month he died." Mikey looked at Lexi, whose eyes shone with tears. "What did he write?" she asked and wiped her eyes. "Dear Dougie, I want you to know that you are the best brother in the world. You are my hero," Mikey read. "And I am doing this because of you. I know no one believes me, but I have to try, otherwise a killer will go free. I know you would do this if you were in my position, because you are big and strong and tough, but I am small and not so tough. But I have to try, so if anything happens to me, I just wanted you to know that I love you because you are my big brother and you are my hero." Mikey tried to choke back tears. "Love, Kevin." Lexi sniffled. Mikey stared at the young boy's handwriting on the letter for a moment in silence, with only the humming of the furnaces in the background. No one moved. Finally, Lexi sniffled again. "That is so sweet," she said. "That goofy kid," Mikey said. "I wonder what happened that day before the bus accident," Chad said. "I know what happened," Mikey turned to Chad. He stood and paced the boiler room. "I saw the whole thing." "What? You saw the whole thing? What do you mean? How?" Donnie asked. "I'll tell you. But I don't want any commentary, got that?" Mikey pointed at Donnie. "And I don't care if you don't believe me or if you think I'm crazy, understand?" Donnie nodded. He still had the evidence of the black eye Mikey had given him. "I saw the ghost of Kevin tonight," Mikey said. Lexi gasped and covered her mouth. What? Where? When I ran off into the woods, Mikey said. I was alone, trapped in the trees, and that's when I heard some footsteps behind me. Donnie grabbed Chad's arm. Oh man, I hate this scary stuff. Chad grimaced and pulled away. Jeez. I turned and saw that it was a tall man following me, Mikey continued. I couldn't see his face, but I had a feeling it was the Reverend Johnson, Lexi interrupted. Mikey nodded. He raised the sledgehammer and tried to kill me with it. That's when I heard the voice. What voice? Chad asked. Mikey hesitated and looked at Donnie, who stared with wide eyes and mouth agape. I heard the ghost's voice. Lexi stood up. He was there? Kevin's ghost was there? Yes, Mikey said. He told me to run, so I did. Far out, Chad said. The ghost helped you. I ran and hid under the bridge until the Reverend was gone, and that's when Kevin's ghost showed me what happened, Mikey explained. So, what happened? Donnie asked. He showed me what happened in a vision of some sort. You see, he had a feeling something was up with the bus driver, Mr. Davis, and he told his friends about it, but they only laughed at him. Mikey looked at Donnie and Chad, then Stan. I know the feeling. His friends frowned and looked down in shame. So, I guess he wanted to prove to them that Mr. Davis was the murderer of those missing women. They all leaned in closer. Go on, Lexi said. He led his friends to the forest that day after school because he had a feeling the bus driver would be there on the far side of the pond. Mikey looked at the letter. And he was right. Wow, Chad said. He and his friends caught Mr. Davis in the act as he was dumping a woman's body into the pond. No wonder, Lexi said with a faraway look in her eyes. No wonder they were killed. Yeah, that's right, Mikey said. The bus driver killed them that day because he was sloppy. He needed to get rid of eyewitnesses. Mikey put the letter in his pocket. So tragic, Lexi said. So you were right, Mike, Chad said. The killer is Reverend Johnson. I knew it, Lexi began pacing too. I've always had an eerie feeling about that man. I never trusted him. She jabbed the air with her finger for emphasis. Wow, Donnie said. He's Mr. Davis, the bus driver. Donnie cocked his head and looked confused. What is it? Chad asked him. I'm confused. What else is new? Chad crossed his arms. Shut up, Donnie shoved him hard. What are you confused about? Lexi asked. Well, why did he return to Sherman Oaks? Didn't he know he would get caught? Donnie asked. Well, maybe, Mikey said. The old saying is true. The killer always returns to the scene of the crime. Donnie nodded. I guess so. Mikey, he ran out of the church after you left, Chad said. Really? Mikey said. Yeah, your dad ran after you, and that's when he saw the Reverend head out the back door, Chad said. Your dad has the letter, too. He does? Mikey's eyes grew wide. He exhaled. Oh, good. I thought it was lost forever. But Mikey didn't say anything after that. Instead, he ran to the boiler room door, headed up the stairs, and toward the door leading to the hall. He stopped in front of it for a moment and turned to the window leading out of the school. This time, he didn't climb out the broken window like usual. He picked up a chair and used it to break the doorknob of the door that led to the school hallway. The others followed him. Dude, what are you doing? Chad yelled. The door opened and Mikey ran down the darkened hall with his friends running after him. I've never been in the school after dark like this before, Lexi giggled, except for parent-teacher conferences. The halls were dark except for the light from the street lamps streaming in through the windows. Mikey turned a corner and headed toward the high school portion of the building. He ran toward the gymnasium. They all skidded across the tile floor after him. Mikey, where are you going? Chad shouted. Donnie huffed and puffed behind him, grabbing his chest. I'm gonna have a heart attack, he said. He patted his pockets. Dang it. What is it now? Chad asked him. Dang, why did I forget to bring a grape lollipop? He patted his pants pocket. Oh wait, here's one. Not now, man, Chad said as he ran past him. Finally, Mikey skidded to a stop in front of the large trophy case at the gymnasium entrance the high school kids used. He stared at it when the others caught up to him. It was filled with plaques and trophies and banners and framed photos. A single light from inside the case shone down on all its contents. Why? Are we here? Mikey motioned toward the case. Chad, Donnie, Stanny, and Lexi peeked through the glass. There, behind the numerous trophies and plaques, were a few framed black and white photographs hanging in the back. They are old photographs, Stanny said. I've walked by this case 100 times since I've been at this school, and not once did I ever notice these photos before, Mikey said. The others studied the photos as he spoke. Yeah, Chad said. Me neither. Wow, Mikey, Donnie said. Your dad was a hockey and football star. In the photographs, Mikey saw his young father smiling and shaking hands with the governor of the state as the team was presented with the state championship trophy. Another photograph was of his father throwing the ball during the winning game. A third photograph was of his father standing with the championship hockey team. Mikey's mind raced as he tried to figure out everything. I had no idea, he thought. He remembered Kevin's letter. I guess you wanted me to know more about my dad. I never knew your dad was such a great athlete, Mikey, Chad said. Neither did I. Mikey felt that familiar sting of tears in his eyes. I always thought he was just another loser like me. Lexi cringed when she heard those words. And I guess I always thought I took after him, Mikey said. You're not a loser, Mikey, Lexi said. You've helped solve a mystery. Yeah, you discovered the Reverend is the killer, Donnie said. That's huge, Mikey. Not even the cops figured that one out. Mikey felt rage rise up within him as he thought of his uncle on the bus with all those kids and the killer, Reverend Johnson, getting away with it for so many years. He turned to face his friends. Lexi's eyes grew large when she saw the anger in Mikey's face. Yeah, he said. Now I know for certain that the Reverend is the... Just then, he shoved his friends out of the way of a large object hurtling toward them. It crashed through the glass of the trophy case, sending shards of glass and trophies flying. Mikey jumped out of the way right as he heard his friend scream. I knew I'd find you pesky kids here, the Reverend shouted. He walked over and picked up his sledgehammer from the trophy case. Run! Mikey shouted to his friends. They took off down the hall with the killer following after them. The Children Under the Ice, 2nd edition. Copyright 2018 by R.A. Douthat. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means without the prior written permission of the publisher. The only exception is brief quotations in professional reviews. The Children Under the Ice is a work of fiction. References to real people, events, establishments, organizations, or locales are intended only to provide a sense of authenticity and are used fictitiously. All other characters, incidents, and dialogue are drawn from the author's imagination. The perspective, opinions, and worldview represented by this book are those of the author and are not intended to be a reflection or endorsement of the publisher's views.